to an annual crop. I don't want to listen to bands in which Robert Plant, the guy I've admired for years and years and years, is the weak link. I don't want that in life.
Apology and retraction. On 10 September 2014, I produced a podcast entitled Episode 71, which was published on the Ramble On Radio podcast feed. The podcast claimed that Mr. Robert Plant was the weak link in his most recent release, Lullaby and the Ceaseless Roar. Mr. Plant has since pointed out that if fans don't understand what he is doing, they should just go away. Ramble On Radio accepts this unreservedly and apologizes sincerely to Mr. Plant and the other members of his band for the distress that has been caused by this rant. I have agreed to make a donation of $40 to Rounder Records, for which I will receive an LP record that I will never open. Say, right on, and what ho, this is Brian, oh my Jesus Gardner, coming to you from Ice Station Zeppelin, and let me tell you folks, she's Ice Station Zeppelin on this very day. We are bracing for the coldest day in recorded history for this area. The submarine is broken through the ice and is somewhat stuck. It almost got loose the other day, dog went out and did what dogs do on periscopes and froze it right back in there. But yeah, it's all good. For entertainment, we send the kids out to tap on the hull of the submarine with a loony. We tap Morse code, cold enough for you, which they seem to appreciate. Anyway, this is, I'm Brian, coming to you from Ice Station Zeppelin, Ramblon Towers, Dungeon Studio, in what USA Today called stupid cold Hespler, Ontario, and you are listening to Ramble On Radio, episode 87. Ramble On Radio is the only Led Zeppelin podcast on this or any other known internets. Be sure to go to rambleonradio.com for all your Led Zeppelin news and any links I mentioned during the show. You can subscribe to Ramble On Radio through iTunes. And if you're in iTunes, if you go over there to pick up the new Brandy and Coke, which was released today, pop over, do a quick search for Ramble On Radio, leave a review. You can listen on Spreaker, Spreaker, and be sure to follow Ramble On Radio on Spreaker if you happen to have an account there, and check it out, check Ramble On Radio out on YouTube. Not posting every podcast anymore on YouTube. Despite the backlash, yeah, nobody cared. You can follow Ramble On Radio on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, a Google Plus page, and follow at Ramble On Blog on Twitter. And if you try to chat with me there, I do try to get back to you. Apologies if I don't, because I'm working 6 days a week these days. So it's just... This is becoming more and more of an afterthought while Chrysler Canada tries its damnedest to kill me. All right, the intro was a Trampled Underfoot from Madison Square Gardens, or Brandy and Coke, as you would like. I don't think there's that significant a difference. Madison Square Gardens on this very day, 40 years ago, February 12, 1975, Madison Square Gardens, that was Trampled Underfoot, and I would say it's a good day. Robert and the band were sounding pretty funky that day. You will note I gave out an apology and retraction. It is based on the following. This popped up today on Hollywood.com. Seems to come from when.com. I'm not sure who actually published it. And this is maybe the biggest problem with this apology and retraction is who the hell knows who actually gave it? They don't actually seem to say. But it goes as follows. On 9 November 2014, we published an article entitled Robert Plant Turns Down £500 Million Led Zeppelin Reunion Offer, which was published, amongst others, on the online edition of The Express. The article claimed that Mr. Plant turned down an offer from Sir Richard Branson to reform Led Zeppelin, contrary to the wishes of his fellow band members, and had even gone so far as to rip up a contract that was presented to him. Mr. Plant has pointed out to us, as Sir Richard Branson has since publicly confirmed, that there never was such an offer, nor any refusal ripping up of any contract. We accept this unreservedly, and we apologize sincerely to Mr. Plant and other members of the band for the distress and damage that has been caused by this article. We have agreed to make a donation towards the Reverse Ret charity and pay a contribution towards Mr. Plant's legal costs. I don't know what there's to say about that. I was really surprised by this. Not so much. It was fairly obvious that it was a bogus article. It was fairly obvious it was wrong fairly quickly. And everybody jumped pretty high on this one. And I'm not sure what it is about the article that Plant really felt was defamatory. Other than maybe the ripping up of the contract, which had it happened, would have been, it's kind of an amateurish thing to do, and I think Plant, for all his whimsy, prides himself on being a professional, and, but he seemed to really get touchy about this, and I'm not sure why, and I'm not so sure that it was such a serious issue that it was worth having your lawyers contact a media outlet about. I've spoken before that I really feel that on his last album, he got treated overly fairly by the media. They, so many reviews of both the concerts and albums were not just favorable towards him, but all had the same kind of tone, all seemed to carry the party line. Which does happen, by the way. There is a party line sometimes, and media's fall in because it's the easiest thing to do, or for any number of reasons, really. You go about suing media outlets, the party line disappears pretty fast. You wonder how this is going to affect how he's treated down the road, and it'll be something interesting to watch for. Maybe nobody cares, maybe the other media, but the other media outlets tend to get a little sniffy. If you sue one of them, they don't mock and whatnot, because they know they all kind of run that line sometimes. And so it'll be interesting to see how this affects Plant's coverage down the road. And again, the story as I remember was the offer was he's a turned down money. There's no question. There's been big money thrown around in the name of the Led Zeppelin reunion, and Plant has turned it down consistently. Whether there's ever actually been somebody who phones him up and says, okay, this is what we have, I would be surprised if that hasn't happened. But I've no way of knowing that. I'm not going to sit here and say so, knowing that he's suing people who says that. But I would think Live Nation has been in contact at some point. You would think. Maybe not necessarily Richard Branson. The point that they would have been all in the room together and a check made, and I think that's not going to happen. There's way too many lawyers and management people involved for it to go down that way. It's just one of those things. It's like the president and the prime minister don't meet to sign a treaty that hasn't already been agreed to and more or less as good as signed anyway. The signing is the formality, right? The hard work's been done long before the big guys get involved. And I would think that would be so with any kind of Led Zeppelin thing. So, I don't think a lot of people took that article seriously. It was shot down fairly quick. But I don't get why it is an issue that Robert Plant would make a legal issue. I'm not sure I get that. But there you are. 30 years ago yesterday. Yesterday, 30 years ago. We talked about 40 years ago, the band were on tour, and they did play, you know, I was kind of looking at the dates, going, holy Jesus, they played every night. Of course, people did that then. They don't anymore, right? Nobody does that. Everybody plays a night or two nights, and they have two nights off, or they two in a row, then one off, and two, then one, or something. You know, you see a band playing three nights in a row nowadays, and you think, wow, what's going on there? But of course, it was common then. So yeah, they played a number of nights in a row, and they 40 years ago on Wednesday, February 11th, Led Zeppelin was playing, not Madison Square Gardens. I think tonight was the first night of the Madison Square Garden run. But 30 years ago, The Firm was released, the first album. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. Decent album with its flaws, and its flaws overwhelm it sometimes. I guess it's kind of what I've come to the conclusion on. I really, really like some of it, and I really, really don't like some of it. You Lost That Loving Feeling is what us Toronto Maple Leaf fans would call the Phil Kessel of songs. That is, it kills the album. It's just brutally bad. But otherwise, that was 30 years ago. That was today. So, and that's the reason I did it about 3 weeks ago, was to get it out of the way before, so we didn't interfere with Physical Graffiti Month. And before we get on to Physical Graffiti Month, we have Jason Bonham tour dates to discuss. Been some changes, been some moving around, been some additions. I don't think this is 100% complete yet, but it's close. Let's see what we got. March 6th at the House of Blues, Las Vegas. March 7th, House of Blues, Las Vegas. March 8th, House of Blues, Las Vegas. March 11th, canceled the Uptown Theater in Napa. Napa show, we talked about that way back when. That was the first show announced. Now, canceled. So we really have, like, for March, we seem to have three House of Blues dates. There must be some other ones, although I'm not seeing them anymore. Napa canceled. He must not want to play the same town in the same general, you know, the same season as Robert was. He didn't want that pressure, I guess. So so that was canceled. And then we go May 3rd, Hollywood, Florida. May 5th, Knoxville, Tennessee. May 8th, Atlantic City, New Jersey. May 9th, Montclair, New Jersey. May 10, Montclair, New Jersey. May 12, Portland, ME. Maine? Portland, Maine? State Theater in Portland, ME. Let's see what that is. What do we got? Westbury on the 13th of May. Westbury, New York on the 13th, 14th of May. Or you can get a two-day pass for both shows. May 17, the Hard Rock in Northfield, Ohio. The 19th, Albany, New York. The June the 4th, Dallas, Texas. June the 6th, Houston, Texas. And what am I missing? I know I'm missing one. And May 21st, Casinorama in Rama, Ontario. That'll be the show I wind up going to. Portland, Maine, that's Portland, Maine, the State Theater in Portland, Maine, on, I forget what date I said, sometime in May, right? hey, you said something. There we go, May 12th, Portland, Maine. So that's what's going on with the Bonham dates, Jason Bonham's Led Zeppelin experience. If you have not done so, and you get the chance, get out and see them. They are worth it. They are very, very, very good. And my good friend, and this program's good friend, James Dillon, fronts that band. Well, sings for that band. Not the same thing. Usually the singer's the front guy, but of course the front guy is a fella named Jason Bonham. All right, so it's Physical Graffiti Month, week two. Today we discuss album number one. Album one. And I'm going to pull out, I got the album here, and I'm just going to pull it out so I can fondle it as I talk, or whatever it is I do. Not that it matters much, but we got it out here anyway. Now we're going by LP. As noted before, the little interlude piece, Brown YR, on the 8-track pops in after side two of the, what, beside two of the album, after Kashmir, before in the Light, which is starts side three. So it moves up a song, basically, and that's just for, if you don't know 8-track tapes, it's just a timing thing. It just makes it easy. It means you don't have to fade it out for the track change. Start with today. We got, yesterday we got the drop of Brandy and Coke, Trampled Underfoot Rough Mix, initial rough mix. It popped up on the usual sites. And up here in Canada, you have a hard, hard time finding it. There's Rolling Stone plays it, and you can't see it here. And there's a UK site that usually does it, and you can't see it here in Canada. Due to licensing issues, Somebody did find it and post a link. And so I got to listen to it yesterday. And if that person listens to this, thank you. But what happens is I've got the album pre-ordered on iTunes, and it pops up on my phone. I got up this morning. It was on my phone. I didn't even have to ask. So I did get a copy. I have had a chance to listen to it a few times. And it is, I really like, actually, with the headphones on the phone. I mean, the phone's just the phone, but with headphones in and whatnot, there's real separation in the mix between guitar and clavinet. And you can distinctly hear each instrument. Where they kind of, I find the mix for Trampled Underfoot a bit muddy. Other than the wah-wah guitar that comes in at the breaks. Other than that part, which cuts out nice and clear. The rest of it is all, it kind of muddies together, I find. This is very clear. All the pieces of it are very nice and clear. So that's kind of a nice, that's one of the nicer of the rough mixes that are more or less like the song. Oh, forgive me my yawn. Oh my goodness. That's professional broadcasting at its best when you get to hear the host. Yeah, it's a great show. I kind of fell asleep in the middle of it. But there you go. So that's called Brandy and Coke. It's the Trampled Underfoot Rough Mix. And yeah, really, really clean instrument sounds on it. It's great. One of the better of the remix rough mixes they've done. Ones that sound more or less the same, you know, but some slight difference. This one is one of the better ones, I think. All right, onward ho. Record one of Physical Graffiti features Custard Pie. To side one, record one, side one, Custard Pie, The Rover, and In My Time of Dying. Side two, Houses of the Holy, Trampled Underfoot, and Kashmir. We will be discussing those songs today. Custard Pie was a number of the songs on Physical Graffiti were not recorded for Physical Graffiti. This is worth noting. The Physical Graffiti sessions, and we talked about this a bit last week, there were 8 songs for the Physical Graffiti sessions were done with Ron Nevison at the mixing board. They had Ronnie Lane's, not the Rolling Stones, but Ronnie Lane's mobile studio out in the driveway of Headley Grange, the large, the former insane asylum. I read something about Headley Grange fairly recently, and it was interesting. They said, like, it was a hated place. It was a despised, but we're going back 200 years, you know. It was where they took people who were considered insane and whatnot, but it was a despised place. And somebody said, the quote I had was, had there been an English Revolution like there was a French Revolution, then Headley Grange would have been the Bastille. It gives you an idea of the history of the place, you know? They talk about it having a dark history and stuff. It gives you a sense of it, maybe. So, a number of the songs were done in 74, the Headley Grange sessions, but a number of the songs weren't, and I'll cover that as we go through the songs. Custard Pie opens this album, was a Headley Grange song. Jones on clavinet, much like Brandy and Coke, the clavinet's going there. But, you know, until I read that, I kind of didn't realize, oh yeah, the clavinet's really rocking in there. Robert Plant plays the harp. And Jimmy's doing a really kind of cool, funky, Bo Diddley-ish riff. It's kind of a good little groove to it. And Robert pulls out some of the old blues lyrics. Bucka White's Shake 'Em On Down refrain is used in here. It's a refrain also used in Hats Off to Roy Harper, and Shake 'Em On Down has been a song he's used in his solo years of late, as I recall. But he also quotes Drop Down Mama by Sleepy John Estes, and I Want Some of Your Pie by Blind Boy Fuller. And he plays a fairly bluesy, gritty harp on it as well. It's just a great groove song with some fun lyrics. Robert Plant's omen to performing oral sex. Not safe for work. This pie. Did I mention that already? That's the worst one it gets. But yes, that is what that ultimately is. That's what a custard pie is, by the way. It was never played live by Led Zeppelin. Although during Tall Cool One in the solo years in the 80s, Plant would tack a verse of Custard Pie onto Tall Cool One, and Page did a version of it on the Outrider tour. The band also did perform this song at Jason Bonham's wedding. When they jammed at Jason Bonham's wedding, this was one of the songs they pulled out. Possibly one of Jason's favorites. Or possibly based on the subject matter, a little tease at the bridegroom. That actually, knowing Robert Plant, that sounds more likely, that it was more of a little tease on the bridegroom. Second up, The Rover. The Rover was not a Physical Graffiti session song. It was done during the House of the Holy sessions at Star Groves. It dates back to 1970, when they originally did it as an acoustic blues. It got this acoustic blues treatment as far back as 1970. They were doing this, in other words, for the third album at one point. And there was an issue. There was a guitar, an overdub that got lost in the tape. It got erased or something. And that the blame on that went to Ron Nevison, who is the producer of this, engineer of this album. And it says, there is a credit somewhere on the album, guitar lost by Nevison, saved by the grace of Harwood. That is Keith Harwood, who did some later work on the mixing of Physical Graffiti. Worth noting, Ron Nevison says he never worked on The Rover. It wasn't him. He doesn't know what happened, but it wasn't him. And it was never performed in its entirety. Although they used it, they pulled it out occasionally, and I did part, you know, did a mix it in with stuff and whatnot. In My Time of Dying finishes off side one, the longest Led Zeppelin song at, does it say here? I forgot what it is. 11 minutes or something. I'm just going to write that. Yeah, 11:08 is the length. It's the longest Led Zeppelin song, on, recorded Led Zeppelin song. It's a traditional song. It was originally done way back by Blind Willie Johnson, is thought to be the originator of it. It was called Jesus Make Up My Dying Bed at that time. Through the years, it was recorded by various people under the name Jesus Make Up My Dying Bed or In My Time of Dying. Bob Dylan recorded it on his first album, called it In My Time of Dying, no G, that's apostrophe, D-Y-I-N, apostrophe. And of course, you know, no credit went to anybody. This is where these guys got themselves in trouble, right? It's a classic. Bob Dylan called it traditional, and he didn't give him credit, but he didn't give himself credit. He called it a traditional tune, which it may well be. Zeppelin gave themselves all credit for it. But ultimately, it doesn't sound like anybody else's version of it. The only thing that's the same, and I did once read Jimmy Page in an interview saying, really, the songs weren't the same, except for the lyrics. You know, Robert was a bit lazy that way, was what he said. And yes, that's not a direct quote, but that's very close to what he said. He did say, Robert was lazy. And this is a good example of that, right? Because this song is completely off the wall, different from any version of In My Time of Dying you'll ever hear. It's Plant on an open guitar, open electric. He pulls out the Dan Electro, and he just flies on it. It's a phenomenal Bottleneck song. He is so soulful, so good, and John Bonham on drums, just is so powerful. Such a big, fabulous drum sound. Page is on fire. This is a great song. This is just one of those. It's one that takes a little getting to, and one day you'll kind of figure out what it is. You know, one day it kind of dawns on you. So much soul, so much power. It really is an overwhelmingly good song. I was walking downtown Kitchener, the town next to where I live. Downtown about 2 or 3 years ago. And we're walking down the street, and there's a girl playing guitar and singing. And we walked up the street, she was playing whatever, a song, and, you know, Wild World or something. We're walking back down, so we're walking past her a second time, and she's got the guitar on, but she's not playing the guitar. She's stomping her feet and clapping her hands. And she's singing this song. And I stopped, and I didn't even realize what song it was at first. You know what I mean? You know that feeling of, I know this. But I didn't even go, what is that? What is that? I know that. I just stopped, and I was blown away. She was so good. It was so powerfully effective. And it's all stomping her foot, and you can hear me clapping, which she was doing, but she was also stomping her foot. She had a boot on, and that was a very predominant sound. So it was very, just a thump, thump kind of sound coming from her. And she's singing this song, and I stood there for about a minute or two before it even dawned on me what the song was. And my wife kind of settles in my ear and goes, "That's amazing." I go, "Yeah." I dropped a couple of bucks in her bag, and kind of moved on. And as I was walking away, that's a Led Zeppelin song. My wife goes, "Not a chance." I go, "Yeah, but it's not a Led Zeppelin song. It's a traditional song," and I kind of explained it to her. But yeah, that's this. But I was taken back by how powerful the song itself was. Not the, oh, she's doing a Led Zeppelin song. It wasn't until I was walking away that I kind of got that. Wow. So it's an impactful song. They played this live. Quite a bit, pretty much ever since from the 75 tour on, they played it live just pretty much every time. Page strapping on the Dan Electro guitar. It was an old guitar he's had from his session days. They're like cheap plywood guitars. And by the way, I stumbled across on the internet today a Jimmy Page model reissued Dan Electro, which somebody's selling for five and change. If you search Jimmy Page Dan Electro, I bet it would pop up. And they kind of issued it as a Jimmy Page model a couple of years ago. And this one's $500. I think it's got, because I think Page did a few modifications on his. It's got his modifications and stuff. But they're cheapish plywood guitars. And Page always kind of liked his. And he used it on Cashmere as well. And which we'll get to. But In My Time of Dying. As I get more along in life, In My Time of Dying becomes more and more something if I talk sometimes about guys in Get the Lead Out, they do a version of this song with the kind of leader, Paul Hammond takes a sit, and as does the keyboard player, and it's just Jimmy Marciano does it, plays it on his Les Paul, but and I, every time I end up talking to him, I end up talking about the song, and he gets excited, and it's fabulous. You sit in the audience going, "Oh my word," and he does a really nice job on it. But yeah, if you get a chance to talk to Jimmy and you ask him about In My Time of Dying, he just lights up. He loves talking about how he gets that sound, what he has to do to get that tone. Oh, you got to use the pickup this way. You got to use the pickup that way. You know, for a while I was doing this. He's always changing that song a little and finessing how he gets the sound. And it is a song that has a phenomenal tone to it. So that's a little inside guitar baseball type of thing. But side two, album one, side two, opens with Houses of the Holy. This goes back to 1972. Was recorded at the Electric Lady Studios and Olympia Studios from the Houses of the Holy Sessions. It was completed in its entirety at the Electric Lady Sessions. Eddie Kramer had mixed it and everything, and it went on Physical Graffiti. It was no changes were done to it. They went, yep, that's good. Strapped it on. That it went on Physical Graffiti as it was done for Houses of the Holy. And like the ocean is the wave of the fans. They used to see that's what they the ocean is about the fans. It's and the Houses of the Holy is about the stadiums where they play. That was the titular reference there. Trampled Underfoot, as Dave Lewis called this, Led Zeppelin as a funk band. This was recorded at Headley Grange in 1974. Heavily rehearsed. They had to rehearse it a lot. The clavinet, the lick is Stevie Wonder's Superstition lick. Fully inspired by Stevie Wonder musically. That's what that lick is. And quick story, last band I was playing in, you know, bands play this song, play Superstition, and then they drop into play that funky music, which is the same lick as well. And lots of bands will do it. They'll start with Superstition, or they'll start with play the funky music, get people up on the dance floor, then they'll roll into Superstition, then they'll finish off a verse, or vice versa. We talked about doing that in this band, and I hyped in with, if we're going to do that, I want to throw in some Trampled Underfoot. And they all looked at me, it's the same lick, guys, and all I want to do is throw in the wah-wah guitar bit. Just somewhere in between the two, somewhere maybe a verse of Trouble Free Transmission underneath the hood at some point, and I'll do that wah-wah periodically throughout. And that idea kind of died in the vine. It's the same, kind of the same song, same lick. And, I personally love the wah-wah guitar on this. Loves me the wah-wah guitar on this. This is just Paige being cool. Yeah. Now they released a single in the UK. This, a special promotional single was released for Earl's Court, for the Earl's Court show. However, it wasn't your traditional single. They didn't print up a million of them and send them out. It was a promotional vehicle. And what happened was record stores got them. They got one single. If they, for every five albums they sold, they got a single. So if you sold a couple hundred albums, you got like six or eight singles or whatever it is. You know, you got 15, 20. So they were out there, but good luck getting one. It was literally you had to be in the place at the right time to get the single, and so people would say, oh, there's a Led Zeppelin single, how do you get it? You don't. But that does exist, it is a real thing. It was one of the few singles they ever, the band itself agreed to. And of course, you know, record company got excited until they laid out the terms. And finally, side two, record one, finishes with a bit of a bang, as it were, Kashmir. It's recorded at Headley Grange in 74. Jonesy did the pulled out the Mellotron and did all the sessions, all the string parts. And somewhere when I was reading up on this, I stumbled across a quote of Jones that basically said, the trick to writing the Mellotron is to not play anything on the keyboard that you wouldn't play on the string instrument. You're imitating. So a violin part has to be something that you could play on a violin. Now, they did bring in some orchestral musicians, some Indian musicians, I believe, to do some recording on this as well, to add to it, which is very unusual. They didn't bring in session guys, except on the first album, they had the tabla player on Black Mountain. I think that's the only time they really had session guys in, right? I think. What can I tell you about? This is a big song, right? It's a big sounding song. It's in what's called Dad Gad tuning. I don't think I have a guitar to it. I did for a while, but I don't think. But it, basically, it's almost strictly a D chord, and you move up on the treble line. You slightly change the chord, but it's actually not even D chord. It's D D D D, and then this moving line. I told you it's a dad gad tuning. That means the strings tune D A D G A D. just to say there's three D's already. And throughout the song, especially the main lick, they play those strings open, which means they are D's. So you get three D's to start with. Then you play the A, you put your finger on the fifth fret, making it another D. So you're four D's. And then you play, you move up the G string. And you end up playing A, B, C, D. So at one point where you have nothing but D's. There's that A on the second string, but it kind of dies out. So that's why it's such a heavy sounding lick, because it's one note played oomph times. Imagine six guitars playing the same note, and you kind of have the idea. Now some are lower, higher, and whatnot, but there's some duplicates. But you know, it's almost like six guitars playing one note instead of one guitar playing six notes. Very heavy, very thunderous, very ponderous, yet not boring. And drones. It is very much an intentional drone, which drummer of my last band, he had another band, they were playing this song, and he was kind of having a hard time getting his head around, once he got studying the song, he was kind of having a hard time, and I explained to him, it's a drone, the guitar sound is a consistent D, it drones on. It's really meant to be, it just ends up being do-do-do-do-do-do, but it's the exact same note multiple times and in repetition. And once he got that, he kind of said, when I went to rehearsal this time, it kind of made a lot more sense to me. And it's easy to say, it's easy to listen to a song, oh, it makes sense, I listen to it. But when you sit and play it and you have to kind of dissect your parts and stuff, sometimes you run into stuff where, what is going on? I don't actually understand what I'm supposed to be doing. You know, the part doesn't seem to fall into place, and you're not sure why. And knowing something like that about it is helps. And in fact, I was reading that the guitar plays three notes to a bar, and it plays the repetition of four bar intervals. Whereas the drum and bass actually play four beats to a bar, but play at repetitions of three bar intervals. So in other words, they do 12 notes, but they get there by different. And that, to a musician, if you're not a musician, you go, but to a musician, that matters, I guess is the easiest way to say it. Interestingly, they wrote this song while they were driving through Morocco, as I recall it was Morocco, and they were driving on a big country road for hundreds of miles, no nobody, and this was when Plant wrote most of the lyrics. Page and Plant were driving through Morocco, by the way. No band members had actually been to Kashmir at the time of writing or recording it. And the other thing is, they recorded the song with alternate lyrics and slightly different structure, and called Driving Through Kashmir. And that's what will be released on the remaster, on the upcoming remaster on February 24th, is Driving Through Kashmir. It's a slightly different variation of the song. But it's a ponderous, thumping, wonderful, wonderful, powerful rock song, you know? All those big, heavy bands that try to sound big and heavy just missed the point, right? It didn't need... you didn't need all that speed and all those... the devil scales and stuff like that. You just needed lots of D's. So anyway, that's it. That's Physical Graffiti week Physical Graffiti Month, week two. Next week we'll look at album two, the rest of the album, in other words. We'll look at the second half of the album. We'll do the same sort of thing, song by song, plus any other news that has popped up over the course of the week, leading directly to a look in 2 weeks' time at the remasters, at the special edition, the new material that's going to be out on the remasters, the bonus material. Yes, the bonus material. Thank you. That's what I needed. So that's it for Ramble on Radio 87. Check RambleOnRadio.com for notes on this week's podcast, Led Zeppelin news, reviews, and any link mentioned in today's podcast. By the way, I got a book review up on Led Zeppelin just this week, so it's up if you want to read my review on that. Follow Ramble on Radio on Facebook, Google Plus, and at Ramble on Blog on Twitter. You can subscribe to Ramble on Radio through iTunes. Don't forget to leave a review. Listen on Spreaker, and check it out at Ramble on Radio on YouTube. Thanks for listening to Ramble on Radio, episode 87. Keep it coolin', baby.
So there'll be internet forums telling me what I'm doing.
Switch off the internet.